I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Return to Washington. A busy day for Ukraine's president visiting the White House and Capitol Hill seeking support for the ongoing war with Russia. Corruption charges. The mayor of New York City is indicted by a grand jury. We have the details. Taken by storm. Destructive winds, flash flooding, and life-threatening storm surge. Dangerous Hurricane Helene is heading towards Florida. And on the road again. Pope Francis arrives in Luxembourg to begin another apostolic journey just 2 short weeks after his last trip. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is a man on a mission. From Capitol Hill to the White House, the leader spent the day talking about his victory plan to win the war against Russia. The Biden administration had already announced billions of dollars in military assistance to help with the fight. The U.S. remains Ukraine's biggest provider of arms, money, and other support. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
President Biden announced more missiles, drones, and ammunition, as well as an additional Patriot missile defense battery and a new shipment of glide bombs that can be deployed from Western fighter jets, increasing their strike range.
President Joe Biden sits down with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the Oval Office.
Right now, we have to strengthen Ukraine's position on the battlefield. And that's why today I'm proud to announce a new $2.4 billion package of security assistance.
We have a strong security agreement with the United States, and we are grateful for it.
Earlier, the president releasing a statement on U.S. support for Ukraine, writing, I have directed the Department of Defense to allocate all of its remaining security assistance funding that has been appropriated for Ukraine by the end of my term in office. And to build the capacity of Ukraine's Air Force, I have directed the Department of Defense to expand training for Ukrainian F-16 pilots, including by supporting the training of an additional 18 pilots next year. Vice President Kamala Harris also meeting with Zelensky in the Vice President's ceremonial office. Harris has pledged to continue sending military assistance to Ukraine if she's elected president.
I've been proud to stand with Ukraine. I will continue to stand with Ukraine, and I will work to ensure Ukraine prevails in this war.
Nearly 3 years after Russia invaded Ukraine, and with the U.S. presidential election just over a month away, Zelensky trying to shore up American support for his country's fight. Ukrainian officials anxious to maintain good relations with whoever becomes the next president of the United States. Donald Trump not scheduled to meet with Zelensky, critical of the billions of dollars the U.S. is spending on the war.
Those buildings are down. Those cities are gone. They're gone. And we continue to give billions of dollars to a man who refuses to make a deal, Zelensky.
President Biden will convene a meeting with other world leaders focused on Ukraine's defense during a visit to Germany next month. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, the Ukrainian president told a bipartisan group of senators that he could bring Russia to the negotiating table next year. Judiciary Committee Chair Senator Dick Durbin says the U.S. should continue to provide Ukraine with all it needs to win the war.
The dramatic commitment to independence in their own country and trying to fend off this invasion, they've shown exceptional courage, and I think we should be standing behind that.
Zelensky is trying to shore up support and sell Washington on his strategy for victory. He told lawmakers that he can win the war if the Biden administration speeds up shipments of weapons and greenlights missile strikes deeper into Russia. As Zelensky made his case in D.C., a wave of Russian attacks hit Ukraine overnight on Thursday. The Ukrainian capital was under fire for 5 hours. Sirens blared as Russian missiles and drones hammered the Ukrainian power grid. The Kyiv attack injured at least 2 people. Multiple homes were reduced to rubble in the city of Zaporizhia. At least 10 people were injured. Energy infrastructure was targeted in several other cities. The UN says Russian attacks have knocked out around 70% of Ukraine's energy generation capacity. All right, now to the investigation into the attempted assassination of former President Trump. In their first hearing on Capitol Hill, the bipartisan House task force heard about communication breakdowns and lack of Secret Service leadership from local law enforcement. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest from the hearing. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. The House Task Force hearing focused on testimony from Pennsylvania State Police officers, including the on-site commander, who says that he and his team were never given any guidance from the Secret Service.
It was our decision to place those snipers in that, the second floor of that AGR building. They were aware of that, certainly aware that they would be there, but there was no feedback or guidance that they wanted them there, that they didn't want them there.
Secret Service ever talked to the Beaver County sniper unit?
Not to my knowledge.
And they were there that day in charge of this operation. Secret Service never talked to them?
Correct.
The panel, comprised of 7 Republicans and 6 Democrats, has spent the last 2 months analyzing the security failures that led to the former president being shot. Local police say that they were never told about the threat from Iran and a recent arrest of a Pakistani national, something former Secret Service agent Pat Sullivan testified is unacceptable.
Mr. Sullivan, in your experience, would that change how you operated? Would that heighten your level of coordination, assets?
Absolutely, Mr. Walsh. It would be a tremendous game changer.
The hearing comes one day after a bipartisan committee in the Senate released a damning report highlighting key failures by the Secret Service, including a lack of security measures, a denial of resources, and a lack of decision making. Lawmakers are concerned if the new leadership will step up.
The difference between Cheadle and Roe has been night and day. Look at how Cheadle hadn't even gone to the site. Here I am standing at the site. And this is one of the greatest failures in the history of the organization. She hasn't even gone.
Lawmakers say that the agency continues to stonewall them for information. The House panel is expected to offer a series of legislative reforms and issue its own report very soon. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has arrived in New York to attend the United Nations General Assembly and says his country's strikes in Lebanon will not be ending anytime soon.
My policy, our policy, is clear. We are continuing to strike Hezbollah with full force, and we will not stop until we reach all our goals, chief among them, the return of the residents of the north securely to their homes.
This comes as Lebanon's health ministry says that several were killed in Israeli airstrikes. The ministry says one hit a building housing workers while another hit an apartment building. Hezbollah also sent another barrage of missiles into northern Israel. This comes as the U.S., France and other allies are calling for an immediate 21-day ceasefire. The White House press secretary addressed it in today's briefing.
Our joint statement was a clear call. It was a call for a temporary ceasefire to open up space for diplomacy to achieve a deal that allows civilians on both sides of the border to return to their homes safely and securely.
All right, on to Hurricane Helene, which is now a Category 3 storm racing towards Florida's Gulf Coast.
The message is take this seriously. I mean, we look at the cone, and the cone is the wind. But the water is what kills people.
Helene is forecast to make landfall tonight as parts of Florida's coast are already underwater and some streets have flooded in beachfront communities. The National Hurricane Center is warning of catastrophic and deadly storm surge. Life-threatening winds will reach as far as Georgia, with flooding extending into the Appalachians. And joining us now is John Neese, Associate Head of Undergraduate Programs in the Department of Meteorology and Atmospheric Science at Penn State University. He was also Chief Meteorologist at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia and a storm analyst for the Weather Channel. John, always great to see you, my friend. I know you're following the storm very closely. Where do things stand right now?
Yeah, thanks, Tracy. Thanks for having me on. Well, the storm continues to intensify as it moves rapidly northward at about 20 miles an hour. This storm will come onshore tonight about 11 o'clock. That's when the center will cross the coast, and there will be some significant push of water toward the coast in the Florida Big Bend area.
Yeah, John, talk to us about that storm surge. That is really one of the biggest issues we're talking about here. And for those who don't live on coastal communities or aren't familiar with it, explain to us what storm surge is and why that can be catastrophic.
Yeah, just imagine going down to the water on a typical day and now raise the level of the water 10 to 15 feet from where it typically is. That storm surge, it's simply the wind from the hurricane pushing the water toward the shore. And in that Big Bend area of Florida, where the coastline is curved, water tends to pile up. The good news is, relatively speaking, the biggest storm surge will occur in a fairly sparsely inhabited part of the Florida coast.
Yeah, well, that's good news right there then. But that's not the only problem, right? There's going to be winds, also flooding, and also tornadoes in some areas. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's typical when a storm is moving northward for there to be tornadoes on its right side. So right now, much of Florida is under a tornado watch. I want to emphasize this thing is moving so fast that there will be very strong winds, probably hurricane force gusts, into southern Georgia, and that will come tonight under cover of darkness.
Yeah, and this is not going to just hit Florida. I mean, we're going to feel the effects in other states as well. I mean, I know states of emergency have already been issued in Georgia, South Carolina, even in Virginia, where I live. Talk about how big this is. You know, this is a really far-reaching system.
Yeah, and a lot of folks don't pay heed to the inland flooding. I mean, in western North Carolina, western South Carolina, where those moist winds are going to go up into the higher elevations, they're going to be places with a foot of rain. And so you want to pay attention to your local National Weather Service and heed any warnings that come out, because inland flooding is a big killer from hurricanes.
Yeah, this is really serious stuff, definitely. John, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Tracy.
All right, New York City Mayor Eric Adams has been indicted on 5 federal charges. Both Adams and the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, that is, addressed the media this morning.
It's an unfortunate day, and it's a painful day. But inside of all of that, it's a day where we will finally reveal why, for 10 months, I have gone through this. And I look forward to defending myself and defending the people of this city.
As the indictment alleges, Mayor Adams engaged in a long-running conspiracy in which he solicited and knowingly accepted illegal campaign contributions from foreign donors and corporations. As we allege, Mayor Adams took these contributions even though he knew they were illegal.
Despite the fact that the illegal actions date back to 2014, Adams has consistently denied any wrongdoing and claims that he is a target. The 57-page indictment includes charges of conspiracy to commit wire fraud, federal program bribery, and solicitation of contributions for his campaign from foreign nationals. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including new data. New polling reveals opinions of the faithful on a variety of topics, including Pope Francis, and the results may just surprise you. Pope Francis is still very popular in several Latin American countries, but when it comes to his native Argentina, it's a different story. That's according to a new Pew Research poll released today. When then Archbishop of Buenos Aires Jorge Bergoglio became Pope Francis in 2013, his country was elated, treating the occasion like a World Cup championship. At that time, nearly all Catholics surveyed there, 98%, expressed a favorable opinion of the Holy Father. A decade later, we see a sharp drop to 74%. And for more on the study, let's bring in Jonathan Evans. He is a senior researcher at Pew who worked on this survey. Jonathan, good to be with you today. As mentioned, the Holy Father's favorability dropped in Argentina. Why do you think that is?
So we don't have specific answers for why favorability has decreased in any of the countries. We didn't ask a question about that. However, while it has, his favorability has declined in Argentina and the other 6 countries that we surveyed in, what we do see still is that a majority in all 7 places that are included in this study say that they have a favorable opinion of the Pope still today.
And talk to us about how you gather this information for your poll.
Yeah, so for the 6 countries in Latin America, they are among the most populous in Latin America, and also collectively, they make up roughly 3/4 of the region's region's Catholics. And so we conducted those interviews in face-to-face interviews. So we had local interviewing teams that went out to all different places, urban, rural, and talking to people in all different age groups and men and women to get their opinion on this and other items. And then also in the United States, we used our Pew Research Center American Trends Panel. It's an online probability panel that we use to conduct most of our United States polling.
Yeah, and you asked a variety of questions. I know birth control was one of them, something you addressed. And St. Paul, Pope Paul VI addressed it in his encyclical Humanae Vitae and the Catechism, stating that any action which either before, during, or after sexual intercourse seeks to make procreation impossible is intrinsically evil. What did Catholics that you surveyed have to say about birth control?
Yeah, we asked a series of questions to Catholics about different items that are being discussed in the Catholic Church, including birth control. So we asked them if they think that the Catholic Church should or should not allow Catholics to use birth control. And what we find across all seven countries is that the majorities are saying that the church should allow Catholics to use birth control. The shares saying this range from 86% in Argentina to 63% in Brazil.
And the survey also found that the majority of Catholics that were polled feel the church should allow women to become priests. This, although according to canon law, both a woman who receives priestly ordination and the one who ordains her will both incur excommunication from the church, which can only be lifted by the Holy See. Talk to us about how the different countries, how they stacked up with one another, which country maybe had the highest number of people in favor, and which country was on the lower end of the spectrum.
Yeah, so in six of the seven places where we surveyed, we find that majorities say that of Catholics saying that the Catholic Church should allow women to become priests. The highest was Brazil, where 83% of Catholics had this opinion. The lowest is in Mexico, where just about half, 47%, hold this view. But in the other five countries as well, a majority say that the Church should allow women to become priests.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing this information for us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, now to Hong Kong, where a court has sentenced a now defunct newspaper to 21 months in prison. Along with a co-worker, they were found guilty of conspiracy to publish and reproduce seditious materials. Their lawyer had previously argued that they unintentionally fell out of law, but the judge dismissed the arguments, saying they caused serious harm to the Hong Kong government. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, rallying for the Rosary, an annual event at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception seeks to draw the faithful closer to our Blessed Mother. Plus, Pope Francis begins his 46th apostolic journey. We have a report from Luxembourg. Preparations are being put in place for a national event on Saturday dedicated to Christ and Our Lady. The Dominican Rosary Pilgrimage takes place Saturday at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. The full-day event brings the faithful together for Mass, Eucharistic adoration, discussions on the importance of the Rosary, and the recitation of the Rosary. It concludes with a very special concert later that evening. And for more, we turn now to Father Patrick Briscoe, Dominican friar and one of the organizers of the event. Father, great to be with you today.
Thanks so much for having me on. I'm truly excited to talk about our Rosary pilgrimage.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're really grateful that you're here and that you're putting it on. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, this is a very new enterprise. Last year was the first year that we held this pilgrimage, and to our great joy, it was an immense surprise to us, actually. We had more than 3,000 pilgrims join us.
Wow.
So it comes out of our Dominican tradition, our great love for the Rosary, and we desired to have an event that brought people together who were enthusiastic about the order, about our charism, enthusiastic about the Rosary, who wanted a day, a special day of prayer. So that's sort of the broad strokes of the origin of the event and what we were looking for last year. We didn't know what was going to happen. You know, again, we had no idea who was going to come. But then thousands came. The Basilica was full for our beautiful pilgrimage day. So
I love that. Talk to us about the history of the Rosary with the Dominican Order, a long history going back to St. Dominic.
Exactly. So pious traditions hold that St. Dominic received the Rosary from Our Lady. We've got several popes on record about that. That's very nice. But one thing that we know and that we like to hold fast to is that St. Dominic was keen on preaching the Rosary. And when you're preaching the rosary, what you're really preaching are the mysteries of the life of Christ as seen through the eyes of the Virgin Mary. So St. Dominic, when he picked up the rosary and encouraged people to pray the rosary, in preaching the mysteries of the rosary, he was really teaching the heart of the Catholic faith.
Oh, this is incredible. I know you have some other I don't want to say events, but things that are going on surrounding the event. Tell us about that.
It's going to continue to grow. That's the exciting thing. So this year, we're inaugurating, dedicating, blessing, to use the proper word, our new statue of Our Lady. So we've commissioned a beautiful work of art. She'll be one of the centerpieces of the pilgrimage. We've named the statue the Queen of the Most Holy Rosary, Regina Sanctissimi Rosarii, the Queen of the Most Holy Rosary. So we'll be dedicating that image, and she'll join the procession. So one of the highlights of the day is our praying of the rosary in procession around the basilica. So the friars move in procession around the basilica as we pray. And we'll carry that statue, which we'll dedicate, in that procession. And then to cap the day off, you know, a day packed with events and devotions and opportunities for prayer and really fraternity, just being with other Catholics. To cap the day off, we'll have a concert outside performed by our own Hillbilly Thomas, the great Dominican Friars Bluegrass Band.
They're so good.
Outside there. It'll be a ton of fun. And so what we're trying to propose is a vision for what a love for the Church can do, a whole way of life, people coming together with Our Lady and the Rosary at the center, but then to have a note of celebration and joy that really carries the day through. And I think the concert's really going to seal that at the end of the day.
Yeah, it sounds so exciting. I can tell you're so excited about it, too. Where can folks go to get more information?
Well, they can find all about it online at rosarypilgrimage.org. Any of our Dominican channels, OP East, or the website for the Dominican House of Studies, they all have information about the pilgrimage. And we are so looking forward to seeing all of our friends there. And in fact, viewers and friends of EWTN will be able to watch the Mass from the Basilica at the conclusion of the day there. So even EWTN will be a source for us.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for coming on, telling us all about it. We're going to be praying for you and praying for some sunshine and good weather, too.
God bless you.
Pope Francis begins his 46th apostolic journey abroad. The Holy Father spent the first day of his trip in the small country of Luxembourg, where he spoke about the nation's crucial role in fostering European unity and peace. EWTN Vatican journalist Rudolf Gehrig has more.
Only 2 weeks after the longest journey of his pontificate to Asia and Oceania, Pope Francis has set off once again, this time to the heart of Europe, for a short four-day visit to Luxembourg and Belgium. The Holy Father landed this morning in Luxembourg City, which no pope has visited since John Paul II in 1985. There, he was greeted by Luxembourg officials, bishops, and young people. Pope Francis started his visit by meeting privately with the Grand Duke Henri of Luxembourg, the European country's head of state. At the end of the encounter, he signed the Book of Honor, where he wrote, "Protection of the dignity of persons, service to the common good, dialogue and international collaboration, this is what makes a state great." Luxembourg is a traditionally Catholic country, but it has become very secularized over the last decades. The nation is also multi-ethnic, as half of the country's population are migrants.
We have the challenge how to bring these communities together, how to celebrate Mass together, even if the question of the language is difficult. But in Luxembourg, I think it's the only country in the world where it's normal to celebrate Mass like in 3-4 languages, so that everyone can understand at least a little bit.
The Holy Father also met with Luc Frieden, the Prime Minister of Luxembourg, and the country's civil authorities and diplomatic corps. In his address to them, he praised the small nation for its commitment to building a united and fraternal Europe. In the afternoon, Pope Francis spoke to the Catholic community of Luxembourg at the Cathedral of Notre Dame and encouraged the faithful to be missionaries ready to bear witness to the joy of the gospel in society. He then delivered a golden rose, a symbol of the papal blessing, to the statue of Our Lady Consoler of the Afflicted for the 400th anniversary of its veneration.
to see Pope Francis who's coming here and ten thousands of people who come together to meet him, it shows that our church in Luxembourg is not dying. There still is hope. There still are a lot of young people who are happy to meet Pope Francis. And I hope that it gives us like an impulse to restart something.
Later in the evening, Pope Francis boarded his next flight to Belgium, the second leg of his journey. The main goal of this visit will be the celebration of the 600th anniversary of the Catholic University of Leuven, where he will offer his thought of what Christianity still has to say to European culture. In Luxembourg, Rudolf Gehrig, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.